If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Come on back into another episode of Game Runs Deep. I'm Sudu, he's Ben, and week 12 is upon us, Benjamin. 12. A fun week of college football ahead, including the Ole Miss Rebels taking on the Florida Gators at home.
Lane Kiffin Bowl, baby.
The Kiffin Bowl, some may call it. But we've got a very, very special guest coming on shortly here to preview that game and talk about some of the classic matchups in that rivalry, including one in 2008 that was I would call it a pivotal moment in college football history, right?
The
Tim Tebow speech, the national title that followed, could be directly credited to Ole Miss beating the Gators in the Swamp. But before we get to all that, Benny,
my guy 40, blocking the field goal, Greg Hardy with the sack, Marcus Temple with the fourth down stop, and Tim Tebow cried. He cried.
People forget Marcus Temple, by the way. I'm glad you brought that up.
You're welcome. I mean, I'm not good for very many things, but other than pulling out like some old obscure Ole Miss remembering knowledge stuff. So, Marcus Temp, you deserve some love too. I know he follows on Twitter. That's my dude. We need to get Marcus Temple on here sometime, man.
You talk about Marcus Temple, but Ben, the hero of the game, okay, in that hero. One was a man who wore the number 40 at Ole Miss in those years. None other than Kentrell Lockett Jr., who is joining us now. And there he is. Hey, happy 40 week, baby. This is 40 week.
Appreciate it, fellas. Appreciate it.
Look at my guy. He got the Rebs hat on. He understood the assignment.
Yeah, come on, huh? You know, I had to do it the right way. The right way is the only way.
We were just talking about, you know, some pivotal plays in Ole Miss Florida history, you know, talking about guys like Greg Hardy and Marcus Temple. But this week, okay, when Ole Miss plays Florida, since 2008 on, it's Kentrell Lockett week. We've just decided that's what we're calling it.
40,
Is the excitement like for you with this game coming up? And what is it like every time they play for you?
This excitement, this is like something that can never be lived down, something that you cannot stop talking about or you can't talk about it enough. You know, just as crazy as it was that the ranking and everywhere where Florida was that year and for the team, the caliber of the team that they had with Tebow, Percy Harvin, the Pouncey Twins, and what everybody went later on to do in the actual football career, to say that one year that they were the national champions and we had that one blemish on their record, it's forever going to be a story that's going to be told. Whenever you see the Netflix series that they did, whenever you see Tim Tebow, whenever you see Percy Harvin, it's always just that little dark cloud that you go back to that. Y'all lost that game against Ole Miss in the Swamp because of a blocked field goal by Kentrell Lockett. It's always an icebreaker. So if you don't know, I lived in Jacksonville, Florida for maybe about 5-6 years in Tim Tebow's hometown. And I would randomly meet Florida fans and just pick with them just so we can start that actual football conversation about Tim Tebow and Nice High School and all of those type of things. Until we get to that one point where they talk about the national championship year. And I'm like, it's been a good conversation up until this point. But do you remember that game against Ole Miss in Florida in the Swamp? And, yeah, that's me. Are you kidding me? So then I go show the proof. I show the pictures. And get out of here. Let's take pictures. I've been put out of places. I've been offered more drinks or got what I was purchasing for free just because of that one conversation. So it's forever going to be a big story for me.
It wasn't enough for you to terrorize the Gators on the field. You had to move to Jacksonville to just let them know, like, hey, I'm out here.
You know, that kind of happened. It wasn't even planned. And to be honest, I really didn't even know that was where Tim Tebow was from until I actually moved there. I saw so many things with his foundation, and I'm like, does he live here? And then I stumbled across his foundation one day. Ben, you remember when I told you that? I stumbled across his foundation delivering a car. And he had pictures and everything. And he was like, yeah, that's his mom. So that's when I realized, I'm like, oh, I can terrorize Florida. Again, still probably indirectly, not even putting helmet and shoulder pads on. I could still terrorize them just by reliving the story.
For you, it's been a little while now. I'll never forget where I was and when I was watching that game, how important it was because of where Ole Miss football was and the odds stacked against that game. It was a turning point. It was a seminal moment, especially in the late 2000s. For Ole Miss and the turnaround that happened under Houston Nutt, was really because of all the talent that Ed Orgeron compiled. They just need an adult in the room to kind of lead
a little structure, huh?
Say that.
Yes, just needed an adult. But Kenshaw Lockett, that play we've talked about a lot. He and I used to do a podcast together. Then he disappeared on me, and now, I was gonna get my shot in, now. Yeah, he's the one in 2009 that told me not to worry about state. That's neither here nor there. But that 2008 block extra point against Florida, walk through the play because you told me a long time ago on the sidelines, it was pretty simple. Somebody like you, like, I think you can go get me one. And somebody said, all right, then go get it.
Since the game started, everybody kind of take you hear it. It's a broken record. Everybody kind of takes that play off. It's like snap, hinge, kick. Snap, hinge, kick, good ball. Just run off the field. It's just repetitive, repetitive, repetitive. And since the first time they kicked the field goal, extra point, whatever it may be, they just were so lax. And after the second extra point, I went off to the sideline and I said, Coach Rock, I could get a field goal. I could block a field goal. Why the hell are you telling me that, Lock? Go block it. Why are you telling me that? Go block it. So it just so happened, after it was, who scored? Percy Harvin scored on like a toss play. It was an option. It was an actual option. Percy Harvin scored on the toss to the left side, to the short side, wide side of the field. And I'm like, shit, well, okay, they didn't score. I'm trying to go get this field goal. So it was Justin Smith next to me. I'm like, Justin, I'm going to get this one. I'm going to get this one. So I don't know if that motivated him to go a little bit harder or to hit the guard just a little bit harder than he did the previous field goal, but he did. And it opened the gap up just that much more. So I just was able to... It wasn't necessarily a hurdle. I just kind of made it easier for myself to get to the other side of the line of scrimmage. And at that point, to be honest, I was back there. I was nervous. I was kind of hesitant. I just made myself big because that ball could have been kicked anywhere. You could have been hit anywhere, you know? So it just so happened that it hit my arms and my forearms and all. But at that time that I blocked, when I blocked it and I did make contact with it, I didn't necessarily know if it still went in. Where did it go? Did it fall beyond the line of scrimmage for a scoop and score, whatever it may be? I didn't know. If you watch the video, you can tell by the time we even realized that, or I realized that it wasn't no good, it didn't go through. I was on the sideline already. I was already celebrating. I didn't really know what happened. I just knew I did what I told Coach Rocket that I was going to do, that I was going to block a field goal. Still didn't know if I actually blocked it, if it still went through, if I deflected it or anything. I just knew I accomplished what I said I was going to do. And in hindsight, looking at it, that it probably was one of the biggest plays of the game, biggest plays of that decade, so to say.
One of the biggest plays that day in college football history, because, again, that was the national championship team. And I don't ever want people to forget. Ole Miss fans watching Game Runs Deep here, be it on the Ole Miss Spirit, OleMissSpirit.com, and Fleet of One 3, sign up today for a dollar on Twitter, wherever you're watching this right now. A lot of you remember 2008 and that game and how important it was, but that season itself and that Cotton Bowl beating Texas Tech that year, Michael Crabtree and them, how that team came together. When you think about what Ole Miss football is now and the success it's had under Lane Kiffin, a lot of the success, it started back then with a group of guys that were talented, that believed in what Ole Miss could be. They just had never. They just needed someone to believe in it too. And 40 and them got that with Nutt and put together a special season that never needs to be forgotten. Because that season, it wasn't just about Tebow crying, which was hilarious, but also what y'all became. And that was a special, special group, right?
Yeah. At that point, we kind of made a name for ourselves, and we were kind of known for the physicality in our defensive play of death. To believe it or not, that land shark was always a mantra, but at that moment we really lived it, especially playing against like the type of team and the athleticism and the players that they had surrounding Tebow. just always swarming to the ball and being in the spots to actually make decisions that he wouldn't normally have to make. Just from watching film, Tebow would always, his first choice was always his first decision, or his first read was always the first pass he was going to. And we was able to get in certain positions that he was made to go to the second read, or actually pull a ball where he would actually keep it, or actually toss it on the option compared to actually keeping the ball and running for 10, 15 yards. So we just tried to get him out of things that he would normally do. And from that game on, you know, Coach Nix was like, man, if we can do what we did this Saturday, we can continue to do this. We'll be a great football team. We'll be a great defense. And before the game started, he told us if the ball is on the ground, the ball is ours. And we after the first turnover, it was like we were feeling it so much that like, man, they're no better than us. We can do this. And every time the ball was on the ground, the ball fell in our favor. Every time the ball, it was simple things like give reads that are options or like the RPOs that they was doing before RPOs was a big thing, how they was dropping the ball, putting the ball on the ground, and we were recovering. Those were mistakes that they never really made throughout the year, or mistakes that was never on film. And I would like to credit it to the defenses, certain schemes and a certain blitzes and a certain disguises that we were using that would make him look just an extra second or two compared to what he would do in previous games. So I think that mantra that we accepted and we actually believed that we were actual land sharks at that moment. And then especially going into the arena and knowing the capacity, how loud and all the people and everything that was going to be there, we really didn't have nothing to lose. So that was really the building point of that defense. Really the building point, the motivation and everything of the team kind of started right there.
Do you think if there was a 12-team playoff in 08 that season, you think the Rebs are running the table? Because that was one of the most talented rosters top to bottom in the modern era of Ole Miss
Jevin
football.
Jevin Snead, God rest his soul, man. I think about what he'd have been like under Lane, dude. That'd be insane.
Shea Hodge and Mike Wallace. I mean,
is those two guys combined and then with a Dexter? And then the different people that you could interchange.
Yeah, like BB was on that team. Cordera, Easton, dude, that is a classic Ole Miss team.
Mm-hmm. It could have went so many different ways, so many different plays, so many different schemes. And then with the defense, I think we actually would have had a shot. I would say this. At any given time, we could have played with anybody. If we were there in the fourth quarter, we never felt like we couldn't win the game. If we were there, if we were close, we always say just like if we get to the fourth quarter and we within the score, we definitely can win the game. Because it will always ball down to go give me the ball, go give me the ball, go give me the ball. Just give our offense opportunity to get back on the field. Because from Dexter, that was a play away. Mike Wallace, that was a pass away. Shea Hodge, that was a pass away. Brandon Bolden, that was a giveaway. It was so we had athletes just as well. We just had to get them back the ball. And when those games would go like that, three and out, and we would give the offense back the ball, it would be a good game. We'll be ahead of the chains, ahead in scores, ahead in yards, ahead in turnovers and everything. So you know how the game will go just if we would put the ball in the hands of our offense.
Well, 40, you've been an Ole Miss guy ever since Ed Orgeron came and sold you on the Rebels and joining him, man, all them years ago back when you were a 4-star recruit and top 100 guy in Louisiana. What's have you been paying attention to the Rebels, you know, lately, and when are you getting back into town? I mean, I saw Trahan on the sideline the other day, and I'm like, where is 40?
Man, I've definitely been paying attention. I may not have been present, but I've been watching. It's the work I do is kind of up and down. I do shift work, so if I do have a weekend off, that means I just got off like 4 o'clock that morning. So trying to travel and all, but I'm definitely going to make a game. I already told my parents, and they told me no matter what bowl game, we already going to. So we're definitely going to be there for that. And then I see the playoffs and everything. We might be in there too. But I'm constantly watching. I wanted to actually come this weekend, but to be honest, I have the beeper. So if I'm in Oxford and I get called out, you know, that's 5 hours I was actually going to put me in a tight situation. But I've definitely been following. There's not a game I'm not going to miss. You know where I'm at. I'm surrounded by purple and gold, LSU. I don't know if you guys saw on Facebook, my actual supervisor, we made a bet And so throughout the day, after that weekend, after we beat LSU, I hung my jersey in the break room. I put my helmet on his desk. I had a jersey hanging in his office. I wore my helmet actually to work. Like, instead of my hard hat, I wore the helmet throughout the entire day.
Well, let's
go. I'm the only thing that sticks out is that I'm the Ole Miss fan amongst the rest of my colleagues in that area. So I had to. It was only right. They was just talking, nothing my that. I'm like, man, nothing my hasn't done nothing all year. What make you think he's gonna do something this Saturday?
Well,
let's go. LSU really hasn't done anything all year. What make you think they're gonna do something this Saturday?
They probably
messing. Well, you know how
they're probably messing with you at work, trying to say that Lane's coming to LSU, even though that's not happening. Florida is a real threat, but yeah, LSU not.
They constantly talking about it. And I'm like, man, I mean, I don't see it. I don't believe it. I mean, I hopefully it don't. But you know how the coaching world is. That'll turn upside down in a second. You never really know what's going on. But hopefully he stays where he at. Hopefully he don't go anywhere. Hopefully he'll even go to Florida. I understand. Just like you said previously when I watched your show about the culture of football at Ole Miss compared to the football history at Florida. Those are two different things. The football history is different, but it can't compare to the culture that's at Ole Miss. If the culture alone going to keep him compared to the football culture in Florida, and he's created his own culture. So why leave something that you actually started to go somewhere else and build? Continue to build what you started here, man. We the collective of 8 and 9 win seasons, that all started because of you. Mm. We had those, but they were far and near, but now consecutive 8, 9, 10 win seasons, and you're getting recruits and all. Don't leave what you started to go continue to build something that already had a foundation. Stay where you at, man. Stay where you at.
I can't wait to tag Lane in that 40. I don't think anyone's. I mean, if anyone can convince him, it's got to be you, especially this week. Yeah, I'm tagging Lane in that for sure, bro.
I know Lane. I know his brother. His brother.
Chris coached me.
He was the D line coach. So I know the family. Monty, we played his Tampa 2 defense with Ed Orgeron that nobody could never understand. But Monty always used to say, come on, you're a little curse. You're a little curse. You're a little curse. You're a little Javon curse. Come off the edge. I'm like, man, that's too many checks, too many reads for a freshman coming in. All I understand is rush, see ball, hit ball. Man, well, you need to check off. You got flat. You got hot to two. If this man rolls, you got to cover him. Coach, I don't know about covering a Darren McFadden out of backfield. I don't know about a No'Shawn Marino. You know, thinking about those things as a freshman. So that goes back to a lot of, you can say, the difficulties of the defenses we ran my freshman year under Ed Orgeron. That Tampa 2 that gave you a lot of responsibility and the ability to check out the actual defenses that were initially called just compared to the formation, which in turn led to confusion, which would lead to busted assignments and receivers wide open. But that's neither here nor there. That's neither here nor there.
All right, so I haven't talked to him in a while. We used to talk multiple times a week specifically for podcasts. So most people, like the old school Talk of Champions people from back in the late 2010s, remember most of these Orgeron stories. But for those that don't understand, no one has better Orgeron stories than Kentrell. Give me the one that's your go-to when people ask you about Ed Orgeron.
Man, there's so many. Mm-hmm. And for it to be a go-to, to be honest, I was actually talking about Coach O yesterday because they were saying why we didn't win with Coach O compared to what he did at other different places. I said I think he was able to get all the trash out of his coaching system with us and then was able to go on to other places and be actually successful. But it would just be Coach O being Coach O, from ripping T-shirts off of people when they're not doing what they're supposed to do, throwing people glasses, or calling people Little Dex, Little 40, or whatever it may be, just walking in, and you'll be benching. You'll be doing, say, a set or a rep of 8 with 265. Get that little weight off that bar. Get you some 315. Watch me. Watch Coach O, and Coach O will get on the bench and rep 315 with his feet in the air, on the feet on the bench, for like 6 reps. Mm. Like, man, what's up with this guy? This guy is crazy. Yeah.
How many Red Bulls deep you think he would be at that point? Because we're talking, this is like morning lift, right?
So, okay, let me see.
Dipping in coffee grounds, too?
I'll give you an example. If we were going out of town, we were playing the out-of-town game, right? Say just something that's Alabama, a 4 or 5 hour bus ride. There will be like 6 to 8 cases of Red Bull underneath the bus. Now,
bro. They didn't offer us any
Red Bulls. Mm-mm. So where were those 6 to 8 cases going?
Mm-hmm. In his system.
And just as Coach Nix, you would always see Coach Nix with a cup of coffee. You would always see Coach Ed Orgeron with a Red Bull. And his hand was never empty. So just imagine that throughout the day from that early morning meeting at 7 a.m. till that practice would end and there'll be the team meeting after practice that he'll still be a Red Bull. And that's we can't forget about the coffee grinds. I still to this day I don't understand that. The man would dip coffee grinds. Mm. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Maybe
dripping
that's the makeup
all over dirt and stuff, you know.
You ever seen somebody get a 3-button polo ripped off of them? Imagine the hand strength for somebody to rip a 3-button polo shirt. Do it, coach.
And that's,
do it.
That's
do
dry
it.
Fit. That's dry fit, do too. It. Like that's like we're talking like the Nike material. Yeah, bro. How do you tear that?
Real resistant. Can bounce back. And he rips it. I like, man, Hulk Hogan don't have shit on you, coach.
Bro, just an insane heart, dude. Like, because he looks like $1 million right now. You know, he's been at the beach. He's got his hair. He got a mullet right now. He looks great.
He got that buyout that they all want, buddy.
Yeah, he said a hamburger money. That's what he called a hamburger money. I'm going to tell you a story when I knew Coach O was insane. Ben, you can help me out with this. I'm not actually sure of what game it was. It was maybe 07, 06, 07. And it was a rain delay. I'm not sure if we were playing Vandy or Missouri. And it was a rain delay for like 30 minutes. Missouri, right? At home. So we went back in the locker room. And when the referees came out and said it was probably be another 30 to 45 minutes. Man, Coach O lined us up and we had a whole scrimmage in the IPF before a football game. And then when we came back in after halftime, I think we were down maybe a touchdown or two. What's up? What are you guys playing like you're tired? Like everybody's you're sluggish. I'm saying to myself, we only just did a half of football in the IPF against each other. And then we're going to come outside and have opponents that we're actually had all intentions on playing. But the first half, we left it in the IPF. And now you want us to come outside and kind of start that all over? Man, we didn't play 6 quarters of football by the end of the game.
Yeah, imagine if he was doing that with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. Yeah, you're right. He got all the trash out of his system for sure.
He definitely worked it all out. Because the Coach O we saw then, Coach O, that Coach O, that was a mild-mannered, watered-down Coach O. That was the 2% version of the whole milk that we got when he was at Ole Miss. That was definitely watered down. Definitely.
You think Ole Miss takes care of business this weekend against Florida? And since y'all made Tebow cry 20 years ago, do you think DJ Lagway or something cries this weekend?
I definitely believe there's no reason. The train is rolling. What's going to knock the train off the track? But you know, SEC ball from week in to week out, you definitely got to come and play ball. You can't just play down to your opponents. You know, you got to continue. You got to hop on them early. You got to score early because they definitely not gonna back down. You know that they really have nothing to lose and everything to gain. And you never know. This might put a certain coach in a certain position. He may feel a certain way who's definitely taking over the reins or everything over there. So, but for us, it can put us in a position to be in places that we've never been before either. So I think with all that being taken into consideration, I think it's definitely going to be a game that we should control early. And once we are in control, that we should just continue. Because the run game crazy, the pass game crazy, but that builds off of each other. You know, our secondary is kind of skeptical at times, but it's because I believe they like to take shots. They like to play for the ball. They like to go for the big play instead of actually just tackling the man and getting the ball down and getting a new set of downs.
I'm going to interrupt here because I was going to actually ask you about the defense, right? The offense is rolling. Like, that's the strength of the team. And if you just watched Ole Miss's offense,
you could look at that team and go, this team has a legit shot at winning a national title. Defensively, right. That's where we've seen most of those deficiencies. And the thing that frustrates me the most, you mentioned DBs, that's why I bring this up, is I don't feel like our DBs go for the ball. Or they don't turn their heads and try to make plays. How do you fix what's going on with the defense? Because I feel like the pass rush has sort of picked up. You know what I mean? Run defense.
They only had
kind of give and take.
Their sack totals for the first six games were in single digits, and now they're getting home more, and that's helped certainly. But you're right. The secondary is coming around, but I feel like they figured some things out defensively. But yeah, Sudo, you're making a good point.
I think it kind of boils down to comfort and comfortability. If you see a corner that turns his head and looks back for the ball, he's confident enough to feel like he's in the right position, and he's comfortable enough to actually take his hand off the actual receiver or the opponent that he's covering to actually find the ball. So unless you're comfortable or confident, you're going to continue to play in the man or hold on to the man or try to put yourself in a better position to prevent the man from actually catching the ball. So I think it really boils down to comfort and comfortability. It boils down to reps and actually being in that predicament, and which we have been in that predicament a lot. So it's and I think it has a lot to do with how the games have changed, man. The corners that we played with, they wanted the ball. Outside of a tackle, you think about it. Think about a Cassius Vaughn and a Marshae Green. They wasn't looking to tackle.
Hey, Cassius. Sorry.
They wasn't looking to tackle at all. They was looking to get the ball out of there. So that means they were comfortable, but you look at those two guys, those two guys came from the offensive side of the ball. So they were ball hawks anyway. They were used to playing the ball when the ball was in the air compared to just defending the ball. So they kind of had a knack for reading the ball in the air, judging where it's going to fall, judging where I need to be, and if I'm in the right position to defend or actually try and pick it off. So I really think it boils down to confidence and comfort. I mean, if you try it one time and it works, you're going to try it again. But if you haven't actually tried, you won't be comfortable and be confident in it. So I really think it boils down to, like, a couple weeks ago when we – I don't remember what game it was when we had those interceptions. It's like the light went off to, like, we can actually play the ball compared to playing the man. Or we can play the space of where the ball is going to. Because there's you're either playing zone or you're playing man. Playing zone is the area. You're playing man, you got a man. Still, if the ball is thrown to the man, that still is going to be an area where the ball is going to be thrown. So play that area. There's only so far that it's going to go. It's going to be either be thrown far or back shoulder. You be the judge of when it's in the air. But it's like I said, it just boils down to comfort and confidence. I never played DB. I never been on that island. So this is my opinion from what I see. That's just as the same as I feel that they wouldn't be able to get in the three-point and understand run to pass. You know, so it's just my opinion of what I see. Because if I was out there, I'd play the ball every time. If you can't see the ball no more.
We just need to bring back those guys, man. Give me Jamarca. Give me Marshae. Give me Kendrick.
Definitely.
Bring those guys back, you know.
Jamarca.
You got any eligibility?
Jamarca was looking for the big hit, most definitely. Well, that was Bob Sanders. That was the Bob Sanders I played with. Kendrick Lewis was looking for the ball. Kendrick was a ball hawk. That does not mean he wasn't going to put his head in there and go for the tackle. But Kendrick was looking for the ball. Marshae was looking for the ball. Cassius Vaughn was definitely looking for the ball. So they were comfortable in doing that. So that's my comparison of what I see from the DBs we have now compared to the DBs that I played with. The ball in there, they're looking for the ball. They're looking for the ball. But well, all it takes is one interception.
I've been sounding the alarm that this Mississippi State game coming up. I mean, it was already a tough game last year. They've played competitive football this year. In Starkville, you got to throw the records out of the Egg Bowl. Do you want to tell me, like in 2009, not to worry about Mississippi State, or what do you?
That's how I felt. I really felt that way. We had a good game plan going down there, but
was that Chris Ralph?
Yep, dude. The best part is, like, in the team meeting room, 40 looks at me, he's like, Ben, we ain't worried about State, man. What are you, you're fine.
Y'all also didn't prep for Chris Ralph, right? Like, he came in because what's the other kid's name? Trot? What was the kid's name?
I forget. But I recall the whole conversation vividly. I say, Ben, we have a great game plan. We have some good stuff that we've worked on, and we're going to because that read option and all of that, we had a good game plan and everything, but the game plan wasn't for the person that was actually running the read option. Mm. So that threw a whole monkey wrench.
Tyson Lee the quarterback?
Tyson Lee.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
Bald? Was he bald?
I don't know, but I'll never forget. Early on. Y'all were headed toward the Cap One Bowl, Christmas in Disney World. And
that's what we were more. That what we were more worried about and talking about. We was like, man, this year for the bowl game, we're not gonna be cold. Well, not really be cold. We're gonna be somewhere that there's a possible beach, and we're gonna be able to have fun. And not to say looking beyond the game, but man, it's Mississippi State. But if you ever been there, bro, it'll lull you to sleep. It's a boring game. It's like going to your grandma's house when you didn't want to go to your grandma's house. You wanted to go to your cousin's house. And it's very boring. The smells, the sound, the turf, the grass is real mushy. Ben, you know what I call it? I call it the cow patty. The cow patty is the cow patty of Mississippi. It reeks of livestock. It's just every time I would go there, man, it was like, anytime I pass the exit on the road, I'd be like, ugh, just get the chills. It's an icky feeling. It's just something about it. I never knew or understood the camaraderie and this like the rivalry until I actually got to Ole Miss. And it's like, even now, when somebody mistakenly say, oh, you went to Mississippi State. Hell no, I didn't go to Mississippi State. That's not it. That's two different things. Those are two different things. No, I didn't.
Now, I will say, like, if State and Ole Miss had just, like, not broken off and, like, been enemies, the idea of, like, you playing with a pick-your guy, you know what I mean? Who's the dude that went from South Panola and is it – golly, the return the punt. I'm blanking right now.
Derek Piggies, man.
Derek Piggies went to State just to mess with y'all, man.
So, Derek Piggies is – I married into the Piggies family. So that was first cousin. And the other cousins are John Jerry, Parade Jerry, Jamarcus Sanford. So he was the one that wanted to be different. I'm going to go to State. Y'all go to Ole Miss. So when I play y'all, I'm actually beat y'all. But that was just that one year that he did. He did it. Yeah, single-handedly. Return the punt.
That was the game too. You and I used to talk about this on the pod when like O cornered Chuck in that closet and was like, I got snakes in my head, Chuck.
I got snakes in my head. That was the nail in the coffin for Coach O. That particular play. I'm not even gonna say that game. No, it was going for it on fourth down. That was the nail in the coffin. Mm-hmm. That was the nail in the coffin. Man, I remember because we played that Thanksgiving night. I remember that Friday morning, I was by my wife's grandmother's house eating chicken and dressing and a piece of turkey and watching the games before the games actually came on and it going across the ticker. Ole Miss has fired head coach Ed Orgeron and her grandmother's like, do you see this? I'm like, I'm reading it, but I don't know if I'm reading correctly. Because in my mind, everything, I'm like, man, who's going to be the next coach? Man, am I going to like him? And I'm still going to be there. Would I want to play? Is it going to change the whole dynamic of the program? Are they going to put the names on the back of the jersey? That's everything that I was thinking about.
Bro, I remember that so vividly as a kid when we didn't have names on the jerseys with Ed O. And when Nutt brought him back, that was a question they asked him in his introductory press conference. He's like, yeah, I want mamas to know who their kids are. Like, we're going to bring the names back. Like,
Ed said he took all the names off the jersey because we're supposed to play as a team. Nobody is individual. We are one. I said, it's correct. We are a team. But my last name is not his last name. Mm-hmm. We still going to be individuals no matter what. If that was the case, make everybody number zero then.
If we're a team. Also, Ole Miss is not USC no matter how hard you try to make it.
Black cleats with white shoestrings. I still to this day, I'm like, bro, it really don't look right. And then it goes all the way back to that next year. I remember Dion when we was practicing for the combine and we was at SMU. And he was like, look good, feel good, play good. And I was like, yeah, Coach O, that's why we ain't looking play good, because we ain't look good. Ugly ass black and white cleats, them same gray pants, no name on the back of the units. We had no swag.
Zero.
Y'all just need a little heppin. That's just need a little heppin. That's why you got Houston. Yeah, that's why you got Houston up, man.
Hey, say, hey, man.
Hey, the way you spell the way you spell win is F U N. You know what he said? Or he said the way you spell fun is W I N.
He said, "You know how you spell? You know how you spell win? Wait, you know how you spell fun?
Fun.
F I N. Wait, W I N. Man, you got to win to have fun. You got to win to have fun. You ain't had fun around here in years,
boys. I got you a bunch of watermelon to eat. That's all he would do.
How you feel, Parade? Parade Jerry? This time of year, you used to going home, ain't you? You used to going home, ain't you? Christmas at home. Now we here practicing. Go get that little bowl gift. Yeah, everybody like little bowl gifts. Get them bowl gifts. Get them bowl gifts.
I just love the way he said Enrique.
Enrique.
That was my favorite.
Ricky Davis. Enrique. Man, listen. I love my college career, man. Everybody that I came across, every coach that I met, there really was no coach that I didn't like, even Coach Nielsen. I was still to this day, I love them all.
I love how you added that caveat, though, 40, even Coach Nielsen.
So what does that tell you? There was some dislike in there, some disdain. But I love the man, though, man. Just, come on, little 40. Come on. And then Coach Nielsen used to tell us so many stories, and then Derek Burgess would come up in the room and tell us how Nielsen used to be crying at the practice for when he was with the Eagles, talking about his hands hurt. I was lagging in, and he was like, he said, so this y'all D-line coach, when he was at Philly, he used to cry in the training room talking about his hands hurt from practice. I'm like,
legend.
Oh, man. For everybody watching this, Kentrell Lockett is one of my favorite people, not just that I've covered and talked to for a long time, just in the world, man. He's been a friend.
Y'all don't know. Me and Ben are so close. Ben is the godfather of my son.
Mm.
For people that
how's my guy Bo doing, by the way? How big is he got? Is he a D lineman yet?
Man, Bo told me he's going to play quarterback, man. Quarterback in baseball.
Let's go, man.
I'm telling you what he said. He said, I'm going to be a pitcher and I'm going to be a quarterback, dad. Well, he don't call me daddy. He called me Debo. Why? I don't know. He said, Debo, I'm going to be quarterback, Debo. I'm going to be quarterback, Debo, and I'm going to be a pitcher. Cause I never put a bat in his hand. I never put a football in his hand. I never put a basketball in his hand. I wanted to see what he was gonna choose. One day we was by the neighbor's house. He took the ball, put it on the tee, and just rocked it. Boom.
I love that.
Okay. I say okay. So then he did it again. Boom. So then now he has my attention. I go get the ball and I start doing it. And every time he do it, boom. Boom. I say, all right. So then I toss him the ball. He catch it. Then I say, throw it to me. He throwing it to me. I say, we got something. We got something.
You put the ball in his left hand and he can throw 85 to 88, buddy. He'll be a major leaguer for making $15 million a year for 20 years. I'm just saying. But either way, Bo Lockett is going to be a stud. That's the next 40 that's coming along.
Think about it. He already has the name, man. He already has the name for it.
Bro, what would be crazy is if he came to Ole Miss and then rocked the 40 as a quarterback.
Wear 40, period. He's got to wear 40. And, like, I'll never forget when 40, like, very early on, too. It's like, yeah, you and Leanne just had Bo. But, like, I want to say about 6 months later, he was already huge. And he's like, I get a text one day, like, look, he's already a first-round defensive lineman.
He's huge, bro. Man. Like, right now, he's in the second grade. He's towers amongst everybody, bro. Just look at him and be like, he's a specimen. You know how you can see it early? I don't want to be biased just because it's my son. But I'm like, man, with time and effort. Damn. That's just like Davron's son. We saw that since he born. We knew that. We knew that was going to happen. The only thing is he chose LSU, but he's from Baton Rouge. We kind of knew that was going to happen. And, dude, now that's my guard child. I don't know if you guys knew that. That's my guard child. We born on the same day.
Wow.
So we kind of spoke that into existence, just like we're doing it for Bo.
Yes.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
And I got Bo a little 40 jersey that I hope he wears until he puts on his own 40 jersey as an Ole Miss Rebel. And then me and 40 can be in New York or wherever it is, Radio City Music Hall. I'll be doing the behind the draft. And you know, we've already made all these plans. Like I told 40 doesn't have to call me for a year if he doesn't want to, but he knows if he needs to pick up the phone and go, "Hey Ben, it's time to do the documentary because Bo's going to the pros." I'm there.
Man, we're gonna be home. We're not going to New York nowhere. We're gonna be in the comforts of our own home. You know that.
That's the way you do it. Yes, you know that, with your mom, who is one of the best cooks to ever exist, and then second only is 40. Of course, duh. Then I'll just be there because I want to. Last time I saw her, she made me incredible food and said she loved me. So,
man, listen, we definitely see now. You just made me feel like I gotta move this weekend around to try to get to Oxford, bro.
Come on,
bro. I don't understand why you're not doing the. Are you ready? Like I need. We got to reach out to some people in the athletics department. This is 40 week.
It today. 40, 40 a week is always for 40.
Someone's got to reach out, man.
When I think of
all have you on the sideline.
What's the game this weekend?
Oh, my gosh. 6 o'clock? Yeah, 6 is o'clock.
We might be in Oxford this weekend, man. Hold on.
Don't play.
Listen, Ben.
You heard it here first on Game Runs Deep, baby.
We're going to talk off air. If I can find accommodation to stay, I probably just stay in Olive Branch. You know that's right up the road.
That is right up the road. But I feel like any number of Ole Miss people, including the ones I when you said you're looking for a place to stay, I was like, oh, I've got one in my brain right now. That ain't the issue. The issue is whether or not
just coming up there.
4-0 to hit that road and come home, man. Cause he's the best. He's one of my favorite people in life. He's been a friend. He's been a confidant, a shoulder to lean on, and he's one of the greatest Ole Miss Rebels, most memorable Ole Miss Rebels ever. So it was only right that me and Sue get him on for Florida Week. It's Ken Sherlock.
This is my first time seeing 40 since. I think I met him at Meet the Rebels in like 09 or something.
Amazing.
This is crazy now.
Yeah,
and not in live and in the flesh. But what you see now in person is completely different. I promise you. I promise. Hey, I like that. I like that hat you got on too, corduroy. I like that.
That's
that.
Nice.
Yes, sir. With little
like
Lawrence
that,
Taylor,
man.
Baby. I'm running the Giants today.
LP.
You say that. You say it's different now, but I remember when I just wanted to see what it would be like to block a SEC defensive lineman in a parking lot when 40 and I went to Atlanta for Denzel Robinson. Denzel and Rob's art gallery.
Yes.
Yes.
Stop,
and we saw Rob do a slam poem against his dad, and then
against his
goes,
daddy. When his daddy lied, his daddy was present, and he said how much he disliked his dad. I'm like, damn, bro, in front of everybody.
And sure enough, Sunday just up and left. But I'll never forget. Like I was like, all right, yeah, I just want to see it. I'd had a few, and Forrest's like, all right, well, I'm gonna do what I'm gonna do. You know what I mean? And when I say the violence in which he hit my shoulder. Was
Ben
one of the most.
Said, I played O-line.
No, and I said I played it shitty. I never pretend like I was good.
Did you knock him out of his flip-flops?
That was good times, man. That was good times, bro. That was. Hey,
and
man.
Now we got to create new good times this weekend. Come into Florida and we'll take
care
of the rest.
Bro.
How about that? I'm saying.
I'm itching now. I'm itching.
Mm-hmm. That's all I wanted to do. I just wanted to leave you wanting to get up here going, dang it. Dang it. Yeah, I need to get – I mean, this is the Kentrell Lockett Bowl. Can you imagine when the camera – if we get you on the sideline, we will. The camera catches you and then shows a highlight of that blocked extra point. What are you waiting on? We'll see you Saturday. That's
bro,
all
they got. No, they got to do you like Auburn does Cam, where they just have him on the sideline. He's
yes.
you know, getting the student section going. He's getting his team
faint.
Going.
Like,
I might
do the pump-up thing. Yes.
Listen, I'm going to be honest, bro. I don't know if I will be able to be on the sideline and continue to be calm. Like
good.
That, I'm not sure.
We need you to be your peak self, bro.
Yeah, now it's like you're just making it more enticing. That sounds great.
Like Mike won't. I don't know. Like if one of Florida players end up coming on the side where I am, they might get a flipper. They might get a flipper. I don't know, man.
We're running a campaign, man.
Man,
we're running a campaign. Get 40 to Oxford. We're tweeting at Keith. We're tweeting at everybody. We're gonna try to make this happen, dude.
Y'all might not have to try it too hard, bro.
Hey, look, I'm already sending in a pass, requesting a photo pass for Kentrell Lockett, knowing he ain't gonna take one single picture that whole time.
Y'all might not have to try it too hard. Man, I'm definitely going to look at my schedule, who I can move around or what I can move around.
Hey, we're adults now. It's not as fun as it used to be. When there's opportunities to come be stupid and fun again, you got to come home. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, man.
I think we got him, Bruce.
Yeah,
I think we got him, baby. Rebel Nation, you are welcome, okay?
I'm saying.
We didn't need to push too hard, but we,
no, hey, definitely.
We just need a little push, just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
And what we wearing, baby blue this weekend? What we wearing? I'm dressing.
I don't think they said what they're wearing yet. I don't think so. But like,
hey, this is King Crane too. I need one of the camo helmets, King Crane. I need one of the helmets, Ben. Now let's go back in time. Let's go back.
Okay.
How many times did I preach or said that we need to get out of this same color, same game pants? Same white, blue, red jerseys. How many times, Ben?
Quite literally, it was an almost every week thing he brought up. Every week when we would podcast. Like every week on at least one show, something about, like he was speak about how Oregon was forward thinking and was like smart with how the branding and the swag he talked about earlier, and how Ole Miss has so much it can lean into, and it wouldn't, including the powder blue that just has become like their primary at this point, which is crazy.
I said that years ago. Mm-hmm. Years ago, bro.
He also put it in my brain that the Chucky Mullins Award it might be cursed. I don't think it's cursed anymore, but like for a second there, it was scary. It was scary.
That was then. You know why it's not cursed no more? I'm going to tell you why it's not cursed no more. I'll tell you why. Because they limited that. I wouldn't say limited. I would say, how you going to honor someone and then only put the patch? Show the whole number. And since they've been showing and representing the whole number, what has been the difference?
It's back on the field. If you're going to wear it, if you're going to be honored with it, wear it.
That was something else. Wasn't that something else I preached about? How are we going to honor somebody with just a patch? But gonna give me the jersey with the number on it. I can't wear it. Let me wear it. Let me wear it.
Was that a P. Willie thing? Is that when that kind of started?
Yes. P. Willie wanted to wear 49. Which is fine.
I like the way JJ did it. I thought JJ did it well, where he wore the 38. Was it at home and then away? He would wear his.
Which his is number. Great.
I would have worn it all the time. I'm sorry.
Oh no! The preference, I think, for any fan, that Ole Miss fan, is like you want to see that 38. But you if you're gonna have a caveat. I thought JJ found a good balance. Because I agree, the patch just, that doesn't do it.
Speaking of JJ, man, I'm not going to say that. Because before we was talking about coming on the podcast, man, I was talking about JJ Piggy's, and I was like, man, about a month ago, I was JJ Piggy's size. I said, imagine me playing football this size. I'd probably been a nose tackle, bro.
Bet you would have dominated, and I bet you would have blocked an extra point against Tim Tebow in 2008. To be the catalyst for one of the most memorable Ole Miss wins ever.
So look, guys, I think I'm in Oxford this weekend. There's nothing keeping me from being there. I think for sure.
Okay. Well, text me after, and we'll see about getting the sideline pass and stuff to make sure you're taken care of, and then we can get you recognized on the big board. I'll go ahead and cue up the the highlight of you blocking the extra point, and also Tim Tebow crying afterwards. It'll be great.
I got to see everybody. We got to see Chicken Little, too, man. Where's Chicken Little? I ain't seen him in a long time. You know what I'm talking about when I say Chicken Little.
Wait, who's Chicken Little?
Langston.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
I got to see Chicken Little.
That is quite possibly the funniest thing I've heard in a while, man. I have nothing but respect to him.
Yeah, oh, he knows that.
I'm like calling Foghorn Leghorn, though, you know?
Yeah,
like,
Foghorn Leghorn. I say.
Oh, I love you, 40. Oh, my God, I love you.
You know what it is, man. I got to see Chicken Little, man. That's my dog. Chicken Little.
Well, thank you for doing this, my friend. We appreciate you, and we will see you this weekend. Text me after this, and we now put the plans in motion. It's happening.
Yeah, for sure.
You hear me?
Yeah.
All right.
We there.
Love you, buddy. Appreciate you.
All right, bro. Love y'all. Appreciate y'all for having me, man.
Yes, you're the man. Howdy, toddy, brother.
40.
Always.
Oh, love that dude. Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah, he's the best. I mean, there's no one else. Like, great thinking on your part. I know you called it last week in the middle of the episode. You're like, we got to have 40 on for the Florida game. I mean, come on. Like that.
Well, you know, life is life, and we all deal with the stuff we deal with, and we haven't been as in touch or talking like we used to just because, it happens that way. And you see it, like, when you start talking to him, you just fall right back into it. He's one of the most special people I've ever gotten to know, both personally and professionally. And I love that cat to death. If he comes in for this weekend, oh my gosh, we're going to have to just turn it into crazy content, man. But yes, for Florida week on Game Runs Deep, there is nobody outside of Tim Tebow and, you know, asking him about crying that we could have thought that would have been any better. And my thanks to him, my guy, for coming on. That was awesome.
That was great. Ben, before we move on, obviously everything Ole Miss we talk about is sponsored by BNA Bank. Bruce, give us the spiel.
BNA Bank is my hometown bank. I've been with them quite literally my entire life. You know, it doesn't matter who it is. If it's Carolyn Brownson, Witt, Spencer, Bob Spencer, Mike Staten, BNA Bank, yeah, it's a bank. And but they want to help, and they want to help you, you know, with your personal and business banking needs. But, you know, whether it's a checking or savings account, loans or mortgages, it's more than that. These are my friends. These are my people. And it makes banking a whole hell of a lot easier. And you honestly believe that they're in for your best interest. So give them a call today, 662-534-8171, 662-534-8171. Let BNA Bank be friends to you, too, because they've been great friends to me, just like 40's been, man. So, yeah, thank you for giving me let me shout out my guys and for having 40 on. What a fun way to start Florida week. I mean, what's a massive, massive game for myriad reasons. It's the circus coming to town. You know, Lane hasn't quieted anything. You know, there's so much that this game plays into that's not even about the game, because Ole Miss is a 15.5-point favorite, and Florida got his tail kicked against Kentucky. But
my God.
I think you throw the records out this weekend, and it's going to be an absolute zoo.
This is what I was going to say. If that Kentucky game taught us anything, it's that we just do not know which version of Florida is going to show up week to week. The biggest fact that Texas game and the way they held on against Georgia made them appear very scary, and then they go into Lexington and get absolutely just destroyed. DJ Lagway gets benched. I mean, it was as bad as it's been all season for them, and yet here we are still, and with the two touchdown per. Favorite Ole Miss and all this stuff, we still don't feel confident with this game, right? So this is going to be one of those pivotal moments, man, for in this Lane Kiffin era, especially with the way the season ended at the hands of the Gators a year ago. I know a lot of people on the outside that aren't Ole Miss people are going to probably look at this if Ole Miss wins and goes, well, of course they beat Florida. They were supposed to. No. This is one of those pivotal games that if Ole Miss beats Florida this weekend, people are going to remember it for years to come, despite Florida being what Florida is this year. It will basically signal the Rebs are in the playoff, essentially, right? No matter what happens in the Egg Bowl, this game will signal for the first time in history, Ole Miss is going to be in the college football playoff. So,
do you think that's true, even with the loss of state? Because I'm still not convinced 10-2 gets you in.
Well, bro, listen, so this is what I wanted to talk about. I mean, there we were last week talking about Louisville and how they might be the best team in the ACC, and then obviously the playoff poll comes out, and I text you like, what the hell, man? The ACC's not even top 12, and I mean, good God, I guess the committee this year is awesome. They got it as right as you could get it with this week's poll coming, this past week's poll. BYU, like I had made the case that, well, BYU was undefeated, maybe they should be ranked higher, and the committee did not feel that way. And BYU gets exposed by Texas Tech. So, listen, I think with the ACC being as weak as it appears and volatile, even with two losses, I think Ole Miss can get in. What scares me is they want to let like a three-loss Texas potentially get in, and it's like, where does that, you know, it's the bigger brands that scare me, the Notre Dame and Texas that we've talked about on this podcast, despite their resumes being, you know, better
what
or not
better
than someone
Notre
else.
Dame last week, Sue.
No, you did. You did. And I never disagreed that could be a possibility or it was going to happen. I just don't agree with it whatsoever.
You just didn't want really to see don't. It. And sure enough, you're like, ah, crap. My cynicism and like it's been validated. Yeah, and that, but Notre Dame,
I was just going to say on this guy, what's his name's going to be so mad at me because I just interrupted you again. I mean, he left
oh
another
my gosh,
last
dude.
Week.
I'm the me and most him is like person ever, and I hated about myself. And yet,
no,
you get
me and Brody have on. Fake beef now. No, but my point is, you don't think that with two losses they're going to let Ole Miss in? Like you, I understand. Like it's you just want to win it out, right? That would make you
just
comfortable. But the national narrative right now seems to be Ole Miss could lose one more and still get in. Do you don't think so though?
I don't think you want to put yourself in that spot. You don't want to put yourself in that spot. And if you can avoid it, that just the easiest thing, not just for the playoffs either, just for this whole Lane coaching discussion too, because again, we feel like it feels like a broken record. But another week down, another week of not, you know, squashing the rumors and Me talking to more sources and stuff. People are calling me right now, for goodness sake. And more people saying kind of the same thing, that it's either the Ole Miss extension or it's Florida, and LSU's not a part of this. So it adds to the gravitas or the circus-like nature of this week, and it's going to be what's talked about ad nauseum. We try to avoid that here on Talk of Champions, Game Runs Deep, but and really just focus on the game itself. But it's going to be an absolute circus, and I think this is going to be one of the most telling games in the history, or in Lane Kiffin's entire time. Kentrell says, yeah, bro, I'm in there this weekend.
Got you heard it here first. Confirm. Oh, Kentrell Lockett will be in Oxford.
I love Let's that. Go. We got to get him a sideline pass. But yeah, like this week is such a big game for Ole Miss, and like the easiest path for not just the college football playoff and not leaving in the hands of bureaucrats and stuffy old men in suits. And also for this Lane Kiffin coaching carousel stuff. As far as Florida is concerned, can Florida wait if Ole Miss is playing a college football playoff game on December 20th, 5 days before Christmas? With the portal opening only a few weeks later, what does that do for them? I think there's a lot of considerations with this game that make it fascinating, and I love now that another part of that is 40's coming into town. That's just the best, dude.
No, it needed to happen. I couldn't believe it when he said that he wasn't going to be there. I was like, nobody in the athletics department reached out to be like, hey, come on the sideline and, you know, hype people up. Like, to me, that's an easy, easy decision to make. Like, that wouldn't even be hard to think of. But I'm glad he's going to be there, and I'm sure once they know he's going to be in town, they'll put the stuff on the board and honor him. So that's going to be awesome. Now you got me wanting to come into town. You know what I mean? I'm in Denver right now. Like, I'm going to fly back into Atlanta later this week, and now I might just have to get back in the car and head to Oxford.
Sounds great. I will see you this weekend. It'd be way cooler if you did. That would be awesome.
Might have to text Brad. Brad, if you listen to our podcast, throw me on the list, man.
Well, the interesting thing too about this game is. Not what it means for the overall landscape, because like I don't know necessarily. I say that Ole Miss 10-2 doesn't guarantee you that you get into the college football playoff, but like who else is going to get in? You don't see this crazy field or this obvious field. Memphis, we all were like, well, they're going to throw Memphis in there, and they lose to Tulane in the fight in John Summerall's. There's a lot to still work out, and even at 10-2, if you look at just neutral resumes or just blind resumes, Ole Miss would have one of the better ones. The problem is you don't want to leave that in the hand of bureaucrats. And,
no.
Yeah,
and
so
ben,
like
– there's a real shot. There is a real shot that – like, I'm not expecting it to happen, and I want a home playoff game. But if you say you get a first-round bye in the playoff, of course you're going to take that, right? There is a shot where A&M could lose to Texas, Bama could lose again, potentially Oklahoma, Georgia could lose to Texas. Like, there's where Ole Miss is sitting right now, there is a legitimate shot that if they just went out and take care of business, they could be in that top four.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Which we were just like, oh, it'd be crazy if they just got in this year. And here we are sitting at number 6, 8-1 going into Florida going, man, they could be in the top four potentially. You know, that's pretty insane to think about with the expectations we came into for this season. It's truly remarkable. But, yeah, I think, I mean, where do you stand on the ACC after this week, man? Louisville, that was just I could not believe that they lost that way. Virginia, I think both you and I were sitting here going, they've been winning a little. It's a little too close for comfort, right? But Louisville felt like they could slay some giants. But, man, that conference is just bad, dude.
It's bad.
They are bad.
Georgia Tech is, I mean, all of them have let us down here. It doesn't matter if it's Georgia Tech, if it's Virginia, if it's the Fighting
Miami
pony.
Being the biggest one.
Miami being the absolute biggest one, a team that you were bullish on for a while. They said, this is a legitimate national championship contender, and they've just fallen off the face of the earth. The ACC, there shouldn't be a guarantee that any of these teams get in. I'm completely in agreement with Lane Kiffin. There should not be any automatic bids. It should be all the 12 best teams. And this conference, as currently constructed with where they're sitting, doesn't deserve to have a team in. You know, Virginia's got its second loss, and they're 5-1 in the ACC. They're coming off a really bad loss. Georgia Tech, we both wanting to be believers in them. They've only got one loss, but what does it mean moving forward? I don't know. Do you buy Georgia Tech as one of the 12 best teams? Well, if they're
Haynes King as one of the best players in college football, but like top to bottom, Georgia Tech's entire team, it's Haynes King, dude. That's when Jamal Haynes is awesome too, but like you got one or two players, it just doesn't look like a playoff resume. Like as far as one, the loss was pretty bad, and I mentioned it this week when Wake Forest got the upset. Georgia Tech should have two losses. The officiating in that game was atrocious at the end, right? And so I just can't sit here and say, like, yeah, Georgia Tech's going to run the table in the playoff. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. And, like, that's what I'm saying. So when you think about it in that way, if it were the 12 best team, who are the 12 best teams right now, Sudo, in your opinion? If it were what it needed to be, what Lane Kiffin has pitched for it to be, if it was what it should be, which is just the 12 best teams, not automatic qualifiers, nothing but give me the 12 best, even at 10-2 with a loss to one of Florida or Mississippi State, it would be almost impossible to leave Ole Miss out of that grouping of 12. So getting rid of automatic qualifiers is a big deal, especially as the ACC continues to be who we thought they were. And I hate that because, like, dead gum, man, I don't want to see the SEC monopolize everything, but dead gum, I'd rather see Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss. I mean, pick your teams, right, that you think could really go in there and compete for a championship, especially against the rest of this playoff field. Man, I'd take any number of SEC teams over any team in the ACC on a neutral site field.
And I agree.
Memphis does nothing to, you know, validate them. As
well,
a
who is it going to be now? Is it North Texas or U.S.? Like, I need to go look at the, like, who was the highest ranked?
Here's my whole thing. Like, I don't.
James Madison.
Like, I appreciate representation. I appreciate. Yes, it's James Madison next. I think you're absolutely right. Like, they have the next, but they have no business though being considered one of the top 12 teams in college football right now. And the fact that there is a G5, like, this is ridiculous, man. Like, I appreciate the want to, like, the inclusivity part of it and trying to make sure that underserved smaller schools get equal representation. But, like, That's not what this is about. It's about finding, like, the best teams, giving them a chance to compete for a national championship. And if one clearly comes out, like, you don't leave that team out. Don't, you know what I mean? Like, if Memphis had run away with Tulane, or if James Madison if the Fighting John Sumrals had been what we thought they were, you know, they could get into this thing. But, like, I remember what Ole Miss did to them at home. Yeah, it was at Ole Miss at home, but, like, it was a beatdown, an absolute beatdown. And you're telling me.
How hard is it just to say, here are the top 12 teams in the country. These 12 teams deserve to be in the playoff. It's not that hard. I don't know why it's such a crazy concept. And you know what? Really what did it, Ben? We know this. It's because of the way Boise State was treated in the BCS era.
Yes.
And that's what has created this entire, like, group of five, group of six. Like, oh, the other conferences deserve an opportunity. Well, that was because this was some computer simulation. And it, you know what I mean? Like, it heavily favored the power conference teams. Now you have actual people, right, in those positions. And I'm not saying they can't screw it up, because in my opinion, they already have in years past. But if there was a team as dominant as Boise State was back in the mid-2000s, they would 100% rank that team in the top 12, in my opinion. I don't think you'd be getting, like, Texas in over an undefeated Boise State, Chris Peterson team in this era. Like, I don't think that would happen. So just say it's top 12, and you know, it's probably going to go to 16, right? Like, I don't know if they've officially voted on that or what, but, like, if there's 16 teams and the group of five or whatever lesser conference team looks good, they're going to get in, right? Like, I don't see why we have to do that automatic qualifier.
No, I don't understand why you have to do it. Like, I'm looking at the top 12 teams: Ohio State, Indiana, Texas, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, Oregon, Texas Tech, Notre Dame, Texas, Oklahoma, BYU. It's a pretty fun playoff. That's a pretty good playoff. Yeah. I can make some arguments against Oklahoma being that team, or maybe you think the Vanderbilt should be above them, or Georgia Tech with only one loss should get an opportunity. Like, no one's arguing that Miami should be in that group. No one's arguing that Michigan should be in that group. Or, I mean, Louisville, we were ready to crown Louisville. We were excited about Louisville, and then what did Louisville do? You know, just because James Madison is 8-1 and sitting at number 24 in the country does not mean that they should replace a 10-2 Ole Miss. I don't think Ole Miss is going to lose either of their last two games, but they could. Both of those games, I think, are going to be ultra competitive, especially this weekend against Florida, because of what all it means. It's not just about the game. It's about Lane. It's about all these things. And, I don't know, man. I don't like the way we select teams. I don't like because I've always been a big proponent of the playoff. I'm so glad we have a playoff now, but making it fair and equitable in the or in an effort to make it fair and equitable, you just made it silly. It's just not tenable. You've got to be able to play, to pick the best 12 on a neutral site and let them play. And Ole Miss in this group, regardless of another loss, would be one of those teams. But this weekend's more than just Ole Miss and Florida. Obviously, I don't think we think that Texas A&M is not going to beat South Carolina. Like Texas A&M has answered their questions. They've answered their questions, right?
To go into Missouri, I get it. You know, Bo Prabilla is out, and this Mizzou team has definitely kind of taken some hits the last few weeks. They don't look as strong as we thought at one point in the season, early in the season, right? But still, to go on the road and win like that, man, like Marcel Reed looked good. He just continues to look better as the season goes on. Their defense looked awesome. I mean, just Elko was in his bag. Yeah, this is like a legit. A couple weeks ago, we were like, "Do we give them their flowers?" And now we're fully like, "Okay, wait a minute, Texas A&M." Week to week, it's like we keep going from "Oh, they're beatable" to like, "Yeah, they're beatable, but they might be better than we thought they were." And I think this weekend was just another kind of example of that against Mizzou.
I think so too. And Marcel Reed, man, I owe you an apology. I said I wasn't a big believer. I believe, man. I mean, like y'all just keep putting belt to ass. I mean, y'all continue. Every week when I want to pick an upset, and it's not even close. I mean, they're just clinically beating up on these teams with a physical brand of football that is really impressive. You know, Notre Dame against Pitt this weekend is where game day is going to be. I think Notre Dame is going to win that game. They're going to be in the college football playoff, even though they lost their first two games. But now, like, one of those two games was who? Texas A&M. And Texas A&M is one of the is one of the top three teams in the country. And you can't really hold that against them anymore. Like, if they hadn't lost when they did, I think it would have been a different conversation entirely. So it's not a stacked weekend as far as games, you know, primetime matchups. And that's what makes the Florida Ole Miss one stick out so much. But I think what you're seeing really, like, the playoff picture has been crystallized. We know who the teams are. The question is who's going to get screwed just because they want to make sure that the G6 is represented. Because, like, honestly – there's nobody out there that deserves to be. BYU deserves to be in at 12. And then after that, I'm sorry if you ended up with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 potentially, 6 or 7 SEC teams. Because I'm not going to lie, a two-loss Vanderbilt team, I don't know if I wouldn't take them on a neutral field against BYU, right? I mean, Diego Pavia against Auburn this weekend, a Hugh Freeze-less Auburn, who looked so much better. I want to give a shout-out to my guy Derek Nix. Colin plays for Auburn.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Auburn's got a good offense. I guess when you'd give him like all the downs instead of just maybe like third down, Derek Nix can be in his back. Turns out having one guy call plays the whole game is a great idea, Ben. Who would have thought?
It's crazy. Now, Ken Austin played a role in that in game planning as well. I mean, that's a decorated coach from the Canadian Football League. But Derek Nix was the primary play caller for Auburn against Vanderbilt. And it wasn't because of the offense that they lost. It was because DJ Durkin, who admitted, like, in a really refreshing moment of self-reflection, said in the post-game press conference, it's really hard to call a defense while also being the head coach. He hadn't done that in a while. So he was trying to do double duty and gives up 45 points to Diego Pavia, who put up 300 yards passing, 3 tutties, rushed for 100-something yards. That Vanderbilt team, man, yeah, I would take them on a neutral site against BYU. Would you take them? It would be, to me, a coin flip against Notre Dame on a neutral field. The SEC is far and away the best conference this year, regardless of what anybody says. The best team is Ohio State, Julian Saint, or Indiana. I love, like, Fernando Mendoza is your Heisman winner, right? I mean, we're there.
You think so?
Dude, how is he not? He had his Heisman moment.
I agree. I do think this week I finally was like, okay, that's his Heisman moment. Because that was the one thing I kept saying, right? It's like, I like Mendoza, but I feel like Mendoza's got a lot of good weapons around him. And maybe some of these are like little dump-offs that go for, you know, 30, 40 yards, whatever. But yeah, that touchdown, which we're going to get to here in a second, was just, I mean, dude, getting hit like that. And I mean, granted, Omar, what was his name? Omar Cooper. What was the receiver's name that caught it? I think it was Omar Cooper, right? He made a phenomenal play. But for Mendoza to sit in the pocket and get absolutely blown up and still deliver that ball, I agree. I think that was, in fact, that was definitely the best Heisman moment we've seen all year.
Oh, yeah. And that's where I think he's the lead. And also, he's the leader in the clubhouse to be QB1-1 for the Jets whenever they're picking in the spring at number one overall. You know, I hate it for him. But I saw NFL – I mean, those are NFL throws, man. And, Yeah, he was like that reserve wide receiver number 80 who hadn't really done anything all year, and he has a career game on that day. And Fernando Mendoza kept going to him and kept giving him deliverable balls that if you don't make the play, no one will. And I was like, dude, yeah, this kid's got real NFL juice. And when you watch other quarterbacks, there's some things that you don't love. Like, I love Ty Simpson, but, like, there's some things that are questionable. Yeah. But when it comes to Fernando Mendoza, man, he looks like he's just, like, right out of central casting for this stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think Indiana is absolutely – I mean, it's beyond a shadow of a doubt. Yes, losing to Penn State would have been something everybody would have piled on, but even still, at State College, they packed it out. They're 3-5, whatever. Loud, they came through and did what good teams do, and that is rally and win in the final moments and to move to 10-0. And, like, after them, after those two, Texas A&M maybe two, you can make a case for anybody. Like, anybody. I would take Ole Miss
against
anybody. And
let me say, Ben, it sounds like you agree with this, but a lot of people were like, oh, my God, Indiana, like, barely squirting it out against Penn State. Are they really as good as we think? And I thought that win proved more about them being elite than if they would have just blown out Penn State. Because let's be real, Penn State, right, despite the way their season has gone, that is a well-recruited team. Like, there are NFL guys all over that roster for Penn State. And they decided this week they wanted to show up because this was essentially the best kind of game opportunity for them, right? That with the way the season has gone, like, this is almost like their Super Bowl or their national title game or their college football playoff game if they could, you know, give Indiana their first loss of the season. So they brought their best. And what I think separates teams that are going to be good in the playoffs is their ability to scratch out wins and fight and claw and win like that. That I watched that game and I went, this is playoff caliber football from Indiana. Despite their backs being against the wall and them being down, they stayed in the game and at the end to win the way they did. I think that said more about their resume as a playoff contender than if they would have just blown out Penn State, because it showed that resilience that you're going to need when you play really good teams in the postseason.
Absolutely. And right now I'm looking at the teams that I would realistically pick to win a national championship. Like, if you said, all right, you get four that you legitimately believe could win by watching what we watch, I would put Georgia in there, Texas A&M, Ohio State, Indiana. Oh man, it's getting harder and harder. But I would put Ole Miss right there on the fringe of that as well. I wouldn't put any of these ACC teams. I wouldn't slap a Miami in there just because of what they were early on in the season. And now you got all this, like, talk about how Miami is going to go and just absolutely splurge for another quarterback in the portal. You've done that back-to-back years and still have not gotten the outcome that you've been in search of, which is a college football playoff berth, but also winning a national championship. And the consistent through line with that is Mario Cristobal. Not to say that Miami needs to be moving on from Mario Cristobal, but it's not about spending more money on another decorated quarterback. Systemically, there's a fall off that you have to identify why that is happening. So this Miami team, I was never big on them. You were. But this Ole Miss team, this Georgia team, Alabama, Indiana, Ohio State, these are the teams that I really think are legitimate national championship contenders. And if you're for Ole Miss and you're worried about Lane or whether or not he's coming back or this, that, and the other, like, the more Ole Miss wins, the more it makes it easier, you know, or makes it harder for him and easier, a more crystal clear decision. Like, Ole Miss just needs him to make or to tell them one thing or another in a considerate amount of time so that they're not left wanting or having to by no, like, of course, Pete Golding, a promotion of Pete Golding or a promotion of Joe Judge would be under consideration of all the potential outcomes. But that's not where Ole Miss would start necessarily, and they don't want to be limited to that either. So if Lane drags this out, it would just be a dickhead thing to do, show a complete lack of consideration not only for the school you work for, but the school that's coming after you, man. So, like, Ole Miss would be the number one, if not a top three job, certainly, on the market if it did come open. I don't think it does. Because they continue to barrel towards the playoffs, and I would take them against anybody. And let's just stop trying to make the ACC happen like Fetch. Let's just stop trying to make it happen. It ain't happening, Sue. It ain't happening. Are we ready to bless Arch yet?
Well, I was going to say yes, but Riverside is once again giving us issues on a video. So this entire podcast, I've been trying to upload the videos, and every single time it just keeps saying error.
It's okay. I want to bless your heart, Sudo. we're fighting the good fight of technological misery for this is the second show now that you've had to deal with this. It's okay. You know, we've had
and a note on Bless Your Heart, by the way. From now on, if you are a fan of Bless Your Heart, you're going to have to watch it on Spotify because YouTube no longer will allow me to include Bless Your Heart because of the footage that we use for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
copyright.
So if you guys are fans of Bless Your Heart, which it's looking like it's going to be hard to do this week because of this whatever
it's okay
is happening with Riverside. God, I had some great plays this week for Bless Your Heart, man. Some really good plays.
Bless your heart, Sudu Upadeya. Your heart was in the right place. But you know what? We went 115, talked to 40, and we broke down the big game this weekend. We always pick upset. Who are you picking this weekend?
Okay, first of all, can I say I picked Auburn last week. That didn't work out. That was
so
fun.
Close,
almost
though.
Worked out. Very so close. Also picked Mizzou just for fun, and they got absolutely annihilated. But that was – I was a little more serious about Vandy Auburn than I was about the Mizzou A&M thing. But
Am I wrong in thinking that Drink is completely checked out?
Dude, that's what I'm saying, bro.
He looks checked out.
He just does not seem to be fully there. If you're Florida, though, like, you know, as much as we like to make fun of Florida and the dysfunction, like, they're smart. Like, they want to win. You've got to already be talking to Drink, right? Like, Drink probably thinks that he's the favorite. That's probably how they've positioned it, despite Lane being the favorite. Like, where else could he be going if it's not
Penn
Florida?
State.
Like, you've given me so many names for Penn State at this point, man. James,
I know.
Brian Kelly, Drink.
Brian Kelly is about to dig into a prolonged fight about his buyout with LSU. So that might make him sit out for a year. But that one was like already there was rumblings about Brian Kelly and Penn State before LSU moved on. Like,
right.
It wasn't just, you know, Ben's making up some nonsense here. It's like,
no, you're not. But like, it's like, do you like with all the stuff coming out about him and all these players, like things that most if you were like a real deal college football fan, you just knew like Brian Kelly doesn't seem like a good guy. You know, he just doesn't seem like a great guy.
And no one's come out to say good things about him. And that's the funniest thing. Yeah. Matt Rhule re-upped. He wanted Penn State, but, like, how could you sell if you're state college firing James Franklin for Matt Rhule?
For Matt Rhule, I agree.
Matt Rhule didn't ever want enough. So, like, if you look at it, I think Drink's in play there. Drink, but either way, the point is, like, Drink seems to be on the move. He wants to go somewhere. He wants to either go to Florida or Penn State, maybe even LSU. I don't know what LSU's going to do. I really don't. I just know that they're not really involved with Lane at all. It's Florida or the Ole Miss extension for him right now. And we'll see where it goes, but, like, the best thing if you're an Ole Miss fan or just a college football fan in general, just you're an Ole Miss fan, just keep winning, right? I mean, because, like, for you, you're in the best place you've ever been. Yeah, you're in the best place you've ever been in the modern era, and these are only good problems to have. But this is going to be the week of all weeks in terms of that. Like, all the noise that Lane claims they block out, all that rat poison, it's never going to be louder than this week for the Florida Gators coming into town at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium.
No doubt about it. All right, let's do some Week 12 picks. We do apologize for our Spotify people. No Bless Your Heart this week. I need to just reach out to Riverside Support because this has kind of been a problem the last couple of weeks. And if I'm going to pay someone money for our podcast.
Getting sassy with it.
Hey, they better come through, okay? This is people love Bless Your Heart, by the way. I've gotten so many comments about it now. But anyways, okay, Week 12, like lots of great matchups this week. Starting with Notre Dame at Pitt. You don't think there's any shot that the Fighting Irish go down?
No.
Yeah.
I hate it. Dude, you know what's going to really grind your gears?
What's that?
When they're one of those final two teams standing.
That would. But you know what? At that point, I'll go, hey, I was wrong. If they beat legitimate teams in the playoff, then awesome. Like, I was wrong. You know, I have no problem with admitting that.
No, whatever. It's just like, I was wrong. But like, it's going to drive me crazy too. Because what's like one of the things I've been bitching and complaining about all year? Man, let's get rid of preseason rankings, all right? Just, like, the first batch doesn't need to come out till week five or six. And Notre Dame, if you were just, like, ranking them now, how many people would really hold it against them that they lost to Texas A&M, who's 9-0 in week one or week two, whatever the hell it was? You know, like, let's stop pretending like Notre Dame isn't one of the best 12 right now when you look at the rest of it. Who would you replace them with? Vandy? Maybe. But James Madison? Tulane, Memphis, Miami. Like, of course,
no,
Notre Dame.
I think the only teams, like, now that when I look at these rankings and I go, like, well, they got a shot or I'd be intrigued to see them. It'd be intriguing to see them would be one would be Vandy. Pavia had like one of his best games like as a passer against Auburn, which I was like, whoa, okay, so you got that in you, huh? So Vandy potentially in Georgia Tech, and it's literally because of, well, Vandy's got across the board, they've got some great players, and like defensively, I think they're pretty solid despite this week being a little weird. Georgia Tech, it's all about Haynes King. It's like, can Haynes King be like Cam Scadaboo was a year ago for Arizona State and almost getting the upset over Texas? Like, could Haynes King be that guy? If Georgia Tech beats Georgia, they're probably putting him in, right? Like, they're probably going to have to put him into the playoff.
They're not beating Georgia. Anyway, so this weekend, Notre Dame, Pittsburgh. Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Yes.
Notre Dame. I'm going to go Pitt just for fun and because I really want Pitt to win. Also, their freshman, the kid Mason Hinschel or whatever, however you say his name, the Pitt quarterback. I like that kid a lot, man. So I'm just going to say Pitt, obviously, just because I'm a Notre Dame hater. I don't think
we always pick at least one upset. Man, I'm really – and they always sound so good coming out of our mouths, but, man, we are just not hitting on these upsets lately.
Dude, early in the season, I was on a roll, man. Feeling so good. I was feeling myself.
Rolling.
I got a little too cocky. I started getting a little too comfortable. I was like, I'll do this for shits and gigs. And then, obviously, we lost a few. But the next one, Arkansas at LSU. God, I mean, both programs right now. What a spot to be in. You think the Razorbacks got a shot?
Arkansas.
You're taking the fight with Katrina.
Big. They desperately want to, like, they really want to make Bobby Petrino the head coach, but he's just giving them nothing to be the head coach. You got to win. And hey, I'm just going to say they win this weekend. LSU is a disaster.
Yeah.
It's a disaster.
I'll give it to Arkansas, too.
Woo pigging. Woo!
We're woo pigging this weekend.
Let's go.
Number 12, OU at number 4, Bama. Remember, this game a year ago is what got Bama out of playoff contention. The loss to Oklahoma.
Ooh.
What do you think happens this year? Do you think the Alabama Sooners still have a shot?
Nope, I think Alabama's going to win pretty comfortably.
Speaking of Bama, Ben, just very quickly, I just watching the game this weekend, I thought, you know, we haven't talked too much about Jeremy Bernard on this podcast. I think he's like one of the unsung heroes of college football. Of like, if you look at stats top to bottom receivers in the SEC, like I don't think his stats are, you know, they don't jump off the page or anything, but this dude might be the MVP of the Alabama football team this year. He just shows up in big moments when you need a play time in and time again. He's such a weapon for them. Jeremy Bernard, like, shout out to you, man.
41 catches, 605 yards, 6 touchdowns, 14.8 per catch. Yep. Senior that waited his time, that's now being featured in such a meaningful way. Yeah, really, really cool to see
read the stats. The stats are like, oh, okay, that's decent, right? But the way he's playing, like the way he shows up.
I mean, this was
up.
An 800-yard receiver last year, and like he's already about matched that with games left to play, and he keeps making big play after big play.
He's just awesome. And we talk about it's like Ty Simpson and so many other guys, but like Jeremy Bernard, dude, shout out to you. Like you are the MVP of Alabama this year. So you're going Bama. I'm going to go Bama too. I don't think they're going to lose, but OU isn't. This is desperation time for them because Texas at 3 losses probably can get in. They're not putting OU in with 3 losses. So
no, this is an elimination game for the playoff for Oklahoma.
100%. So with their backs against
the wall, you lose this game, it's over for you.
Iowa at USC. Iowa looked good this weekend.
Looked pretty good.
Had to really scratch it out. I'm gonna take the Hawkeyes, dude. Taking the Hawkeyes over the Trojans.
I'm picking USC and let Lincoln Riley keep talking about how he sacrificed all of this and so much to be here to be a USC Trojan, only to become the head coach of the Florida Gators or LSU Tigers within a month.
Oh gosh, that would be hilarious.
Keep building that resume, young buck.
Florida against Ole Miss, how can you go against the Rebs? I mean, how can you go against the Rebs? I know Jaden Ball is coming into town, man. He's on that all-Sudu team, man. But the way they looked against Kentucky, dude, it just looks like everyone's checked out. And don't get me wrong. As we mentioned, with 40, and we talked about on this podcast, you can never count out any SEC team.
Mm-mm.
Ever. Like, look at Kentucky. I mean, look at the last couple weeks that they've had. So it's the same thing for Florida. And they're going to be coming in. They're going to – obviously, they beat Ole Miss a year ago. You know, they probably feel like they have their number. Florida fans are obnoxious, as we've learned. There's Lane Kiffin, Florida saga. I'm sure they're going to be coming in rowdy, talking about they're going to steal our coach and all this stuff. I don't think that they're losing this game, man. I don't think Lane –
I didn't realize that Florida fans were – this toxic online, man. I really did. And I don't want to say it's representative of the entire fan base. It's just like in my experience with them, which is really just this coaching cycle. Holy crap, man. Like
you've been going at it with them, huh?
Not really. You know, it's just like one dude, you know, defended Hitler.
Yeah.
And then takes pictures of my kids and talks shit about my kids. It's like, dude, what kind of insult idiot? See, I'm trying to say good, not be bad. God bless you. I just, like, it's not that serious, guys. It's really not that serious. And, like, y'all are getting on, like, boarding on an unhealthy obsession with this. The fact that y'all's days are consumed with, hey, see, he's coming. He's coming to save us, is the saddest, most pathetic, thirsty activity I've ever seen from a fan base. I mean, dude, I think some of y'all would sacrifice your firstborn. This is nuts.
That's how
I'm just trying to tell you as a friend who doesn't know you, like, this ain't that serious. Chill out. Right. It's okay. It's going to be fine. Florida will be playing football next year. You will be excited.
Yeah. I mean, to get anyone's kids involved and get personal over, I mean, what does Lane Kiffin have to do with you? What does his decision to go to Florida have to do with you? I mean, it's actually insane. And the funny thing is Florida fans will be like, oh, look at you. You Ole Miss people are obsessed with trying to prove that you're a legitimate program. And it's like, well, hey, man, like, you're being pretty toxic. Like, people are going to defend their program. Like, you're not, you know, like, it's crazy, man. I can't avoid it. It's all over my timeline, too. It's just nothing but Florida fans.
Like, chill. Like, I get that y'all are thirsty. Yeah. Yeah. I get you that you're thirsty. I mean, some of y'all starving, to be honest with you. Like, I'm kind of worried about your well-being. It's going to be fine. The Florida Gators are going to play football next year with or without Lane Kiffin, one way or another. And whichever way it goes, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. My kids don't care that their dad called you out, friend, for defending Hitler. All right, so leave them out of it.
Wild, wild times we live in, man. That's
just
crazy.
Let's just all take a step back and go, you know, this is a coaching search in college football, you batshit insane people. God is good. I'm sorry.
All right, Texas, Georgia in Athens. For the Horns, like I said, I just feel like they'll stick them in with three losses. But this would be pretty uncomfortable if they lost this game. I mean, they would need some teams to lose, I think, to slip into the playoff. You think Arch Manning can walk into Sanford Stadium and beat the mighty Georgia Bulldogs in November, by the way, of all months?
No. Georgia, like, I really like Georgia right now. I think they're in a really strong position as they barrel towards the playoffs.
You're such a homer, bro. You're such a Kirby Smart Glazer, bro.
I know.
Gosh,
I know.
This guy loves Georgia.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's because Fran Brown's let me down, so I got to take my Georgia fandom somewhere else. You know what I mean? So,
all right, a final game, Mississippi State, Missouri, just Mizzou right now.
Calling it, man. Missouri looks so uninspired.
Taking the dogs.
Taking the dogs. Taking SEC win. Then they're going to be feeling themselves for the Egg Bowl. And, that's going to be a dogfight, no pun intended. And Ole Miss is going to win that one, too, because I refuse to believe that they get this close. What will be funny, though, and the most Ole Miss thing ever, is that they finish 7-1 in the SEC for the second time in program history and still don't make the SEC championship game in Atlanta. Like, no one cares about making the SEC title game in Atlanta.
I was going to say, now,
but
like,
still,
if,
like, as an Ole Miss person, you know how desperate Ole Miss people have been to get to Atlanta.
Right.
And
but now, because of the way – the way things have shaken out with the playoff now, man, it's like I would prefer to just have that bye, rest up, and then we'll get into the playoff in the first rounder with that bye.
100%. You're
probably 100%. Not going to get a bye without the SEC title, but yeah.
100%.
It just doesn't – no pun intended here either, but
very,
it just doesn't
we are
mean
Ole Miss,
as
is all
more.
I'm saying. It doesn't mean more.
As
it
much.
Means.
Yeah, it doesn't mean more anymore.
So, yeah, but still would be a very apropos, you know, ending for – but either way – this weekend, yes, I'm taking the Clangers. Clang-a-lang-a-lang-a-lang-a-lang-a to beat the Missouri Tigers and the Fighting Eli Drinkwitzes as he desperately tries to pack the rest of his U-Haul boxes and get the heck out of Dodge.
Lovely. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another episode of Game Runs Deep. He's Ben Garrett at Spirit Ben on Twitter. You can follow me at Sudo TV on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. That's where you'll find all of our Game Runs Deep clips. Also want to shout out Mudcat Media, who we share clips with as well. Go follow them. Check out Ben's podcast with Knox Kiffin, who just keeps winning for Oxford High School, my alma mater. Shout out the Chargers.
Four tutties in the little egg bowl last week.
Kevin Smith Jr. and Knox Kiffin, man, just kicking ass, taking names. We love to see it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see Kevin Smith Jr. out there catching three or four bombs from Lane's son for the Oxford Chargers. What a world, dude.
And like Chris Cutcliffe's the coach. Shout out Coach
Cut. What a timeline in which we live.
Algebra 2 teacher in high school, by the way. Chris Cutcliffe. Yeah,
Chris Cutcliffe, man. We need to get Chris Cutcliffe on this thing one day.
I'd love to talk to him. I think Cut's probably still got the same number, man. He was one of those teachers. It was his first year teaching when I was a senior in high school. And he was just more of a friend than a teacher because I used to just love talking football. And I'm a big Ole Miss like fan. So I was like, oh my God, you're David Cutcliffe's son. Like, and I think day one he was like, oh, this kid's a fanboy. And just we were really cool when I was in high school. But Chris is a great guy. Happy for the Chargers. Follow us on everything. We will be back next week. Apologize for No Bless Your Heart. We're going to try to get that fixed next week. And shout out to 40, who will be in Oxford this weekend. We made that happen right here on Game Run.
We're trying to come up with a pass for him because, apparently the former player passes have already been all accounted for, and it's only on Monday. So any Ole Miss fan out there want to help out 40, we got to figure out how we get him in the stands. You know what I mean? That's ridiculous. 40's getting this dude won that game in 2008. We can't find him a ticket. Come on now.
We got to get him in. We'll tweet at Keith. We'll figure it out. But thanks for tuning in again. For Ben, I'm Sudu. We'll see y'all next week.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.